Hello and welcome to the In The Zone podcast with Mike Ryder
and me, Josh Hughes.
In today's episode, we're going to talk about human enhancement, which is a subject we're both interested in, isn't it, Josh?
It is, absolutely.
And we've invited back our friend Lindsay Claire Hogg, who is an office mate of Josh's and is doing a PhD on tissue donation in minors. Hello, Lindsay.
Hello.
Hello. You brought a book with you as well.
Yes. So I think I was given this by my supervisor, called The Ethics of Human Enhancement, Understanding the Debate. And it's edited by a number of authors. And it's, I will admit, I have not read it from cover to cover, but I am aware of some of the topics it discusses in there.
Yeah, and it's a great you brought a prop along with you, because not enough of our guests bring along props, I feel.
It's not an exciting prop, but yeah, I thought I'd bring something along.
Well, it's a bit difficult to bring props when it's just audio.
Yeah. Well, we've tried it before.
You can put a picture up on the website.
Yeah, no, we can do. Yeah, we'd have a picture of you holding the book.
But in much the same way that the prop enhances the podcast, human enhancement, you know, what are we talking about when we talk about human enhancement?
And just as Lindsay enhanced our podcast. Yeah. So what is human enhancement then? Do we have a sort of general definition?
Well, I think a lot of people kind of, when they think about human enhancement, they think more about like RoboCop and kind of replacing human bits with machine bits and someone becoming kind of superhuman and far beyond what's possible. But in the same vein, there's more kind of mundane things like a pacemaker or like contact lenses or corrective or like laser surgery in your eyes that kind of, it improves you from what you were, not necessarily to a superhuman level. I think it kind of, there's various things that we can think of as enhancement that's maybe not in the public way of thinking about it.
Sort of perception.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you mentioned vaccinations, Linz.
Yeah, so basically, by having a vaccination, you're enhancing yourself in order not to be able to receive that disease. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily class it as human enhancement. Some individuals may already be immune to those without needing the vaccination, whilst the individuals that do require the vaccination are ultimately only enhancing themselves to that other level. So, I mean, some enhancements are for medical benefit, but then I think we've said things like me getting my nails done or having false nails or false eyelashes, I'm enhancing myself, you know, but
it's a different type of enhancement.
Exactly. I'm not enhancing myself to be medically better or medically, I'm just enhancing artificially, you know.
But I mean, aesthetics, you could say there is a sort of biological enhancement in a way. If you're saying, well, something like, say, doing your nails, that's making you more attractive in a way. I like your nails, they're very nice nails. Lindsay has purple nails for anyone there listening. But in a way, that's part of a sort of almost a Darwinian sort of. I'm making myself more attractive, and so therefore more alluring to individuals and more pleasant to my colleagues and fellow human beings.
See, it makes sure your experience sharing an office with me better by having nicer nails.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not talking about my nails, though. But yeah, no, I suppose if you're thinking about it from a strictly biological evolutionary perspective, then yeah, any sort of human enhancement that's aesthetic is about improving your chances with a mate, isn't it, really?
Yeah, so in a way, they are still benefiting you. It is benefiting you, but I'm just sort of thinking it's not as superficial as you suggest, really, because there is an element that actually, if it improves your self-confidence or if it makes... That is actually a benefit in itself.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't medically benefit you like the pacemaker, like Josh said, or the vaccinations.
No.
It's a different kind of enhancement, and I think there's like you've got this level of superhuman enhancement that enhances you in a way that is far beyond what the human body can be expected to achieve. You've got medically enhancing regarding vaccination, pacemakers, etc., and then you've got your aesthetic enhancement, whether it's contact lenses that change the colour of your eyes, not that make your eyesight better, or nails, or false eyelashes, or tan, or whatever.
And when we say enhancement, I guess we're referring to a baseline of sorts. So, if we take like the example of something an average human, because I suppose there are enhancements you could say sort of bring people up to sort of an equivalency with for people that have sort of medical conditions, for example, I'm thinking. Taking insulin, for example, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading something yesterday sort of on this issue, and it was basically sort of suggesting, well, if you went for laser eye surgery because you were short-sighted, say, and you couldn't, you know, If it brought you up to the average level of eyesight, that's one thing. But if it made your eyes even better than average, that's another thing to think about.
Yeah, no, this is what I was hinting at. So is that an enhancement? They're both enhancements, though, aren't they?
Yeah. So there's like an enhancement to the average, and there's an enhancement beyond. So I suppose in that way, then the conversation we're having is there's enhancements kind of to average level, average human level, to just beyond that, and then there's superhuman as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So beyond the human.
Yeah.
So there, I suppose, yeah, so you could almost talk about the enhancement of the local in a way. So the enhancement of me, I have a single illness, or the enhancement then of the human race, if we're going to improve everyone's eyesight by 20%, I guess.
Yeah.
And then obviously this all links in with, because we were talking before in the previous podcast about designer babies and this idea that maybe we could screen out genetic conditions, or maybe we could even build a society that's, inverted commas, better in some way or other. Because you were talking about, because you said there was like a positive eugenics movement. I think this is an interesting concept.
Apparently the originator of the eugenics idea, his original idea was to get like amazing artists or amazing scientists or athletes to kind of, or wouldn't it be great if they got together and they did make an extra amazing athlete, artist or scientist. Obviously it's not much of a, it's quite easy to turn that around in terms of rejecting kind of degenerates, I suppose is the term you would probably go for, isn't it? So in that way, kind of human enhancement via designer babies, I guess the idea is, you could view it in terms of it being wholly positive because you're trying to make a potential baby better. But at the same time, it's also negative because you're saying that the people at the bottom of the pile, or just average people, that they're not worth it. You're basically saying that, if it was today, you wouldn't be born.
Yeah.
I mean, at the moment, I know we've just touched upon what negative and human enhancements in some aspects regarding what you just said about designer babies, Josh, but ultimately so far we've only really discussed about positive human enhancements, so this idea of pacemakers or vaccinations or false eyelashes or whatever, it's all positive things. I mean, obviously human enhancement is a big thing within sport as well as, and that's a day-to-day thing about doping and they're ultimately enhancing themselves in order to be better. I mean, we could enhance Mike theoretically to be as fast as Usain Bolt, but then Usain Bolt would, I'm not saying he is doping or he's as ever doped, but then he could theoretically enhance himself to be an even higher level, which would be superhuman.
So this is interesting. So Josh and I have had this discussion. I can't remember if we even podcasted about this or not, but we've talked in a way about genetic doping, haven't we? Because in a sense, Usain Bolt's, it's just genetically advantaged.
Yeah.
He's a little bit taller than all the other athletes that have a similar sort of muscle sort of construction to everyone else. So in a way, that's a kind of doping. But then this links to the interesting case of Caster Semenya, which we have recently been talking about, and has come into news yet again with the atrocious decision of the
Court of Arbitration for Sport.
Court of Arbitration for Sport to decide that Caster Semenya should be taking drugs to basically lower her levels of testosterone until all the other women think that she's running at a speed that they can catch, essentially.
But then I think that brings massive issues about this idea between gender and sports. So I read a book about the ethics of sports, and some of the chapters were based, it's actually a very interesting book, and some of the chapters were based on this idea of why we separate genders within sports, while some sports don't. So for example, when you're looking at horse riding or equestrian, they don't separate genders, but then you look at swimming and athletics and fencing, which is what I do, you separate genders, and in some aspects you separate age categories. So for example, you've got the Taekwondo World Championships going on, they are separated within age, gender and weight categories, boxing as well, and things like this. So it's this idea of this distinction. So instead of making Caster Semenya say, okay, you need to do this to conform to what a, I air quote, woman is like, maybe we should adapt the categories within those. So for example, in Paralympic sports, you have categories, and not everybody directly fits within those categories because every disability is different. Yeah. A bit like, I think we need to accept to some extent that every individual is different, and even if they have not within the Paralympics, they are within the Standard Olympics, we might need to look at these distinctions that we're making within sports, especially since we now have, we don't just have two genders anymore, male and female, we have a number of
We recognise that it's a broad spectrum.
Yeah.
And I think this is a problem. I think what's happened is the Paralympics has revealed the problem with the Olympics. Because the problem with the Olympics, in a way, is that you do just essentially arbitrary just to define male, female, and that's pretty much it. There's no, other than maybe the weight categories and the boxing, But you're right, even in fencing, say you have a really short person against a really tall person, I'm sure there must be a difference between the two sizes, yeah. even within the female category or the male category. So is it the height that's more important, or is it the speed, or is it the... Does the gender make a difference at all? Who knows? So I wonder maybe if really we should have categories for sort of skinny so-and-sos like me to sort of... But it's true though, is it? Because it's like I don't have a hope of competing in, I don't know, sumo wrestling. I know you'd like to see it, but you know what I mean though, don't you? Like, because each of these sports is sort of predisposes to a certain sort of person towards them.
But yeah, it's about enhancements, and sometimes these, because you've got this standard category, an individual may dope or may try to enhance themselves because they don't quite fit into that category, and that's the issue. And I'm not condoning doping or saying it's right. I'm definitely not, but it's the idea that what is that enhancement? And obviously you have different types of enhancement and these different types of doping. So if they take a certain drug, it is enhancing them, but not classed as doping and illegal. Whilst if they take another drug, yes, it's enhancing and doping, but it's classed as illegal. And that's the, you've got a number of these issues.
It's a very grey area, that.
Exactly, yeah. It is a grey area regarding these human enhancement. And these athletes are trying to make themselves the best in the world in whatever sport they're in, and trying to make their bodies or their minds or whatever to fit that sport. And it does depend on the individual and the sport. But I think there are massive issues regarding those enhancements.
Regarding how we define, like, what is a pure, clean human being and what's not. Because I take, like, asthma and medication for my asthma. So me taking that would mean I can maybe compete. But someone who hasn't got asthma taking it would mean they're actually even better. So, but then it still might be benefiting me more than a normal person.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the thing that happened with Chris Froome.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realise this, but because professional cycling, you're breathing so hard for so long, a lot of them actually develop asthma despite not having it as children or something. So a lot of them end up on asthma medication, and maybe if it's not quite so bad but they're taking a full dose, then maybe they're getting more an advantage over where they would have been naturally had they not.
But is it an advantage, or is it just something you should be doing because you develop sort of breathing difficulties? Is that an advantage? It's like the swimmers wearing the swimsuits. You know, like, they had those...
Full body suits.
And then didn't they ban them? Because basically everyone broke all the world records, and we decided that was too much of an enhancement. Despite the fact they're kind of wearing body suits already, but these ones are particularly fast, so they can't have those ones.
But they had an issue with someone's running trainers. So there's like a rule or some sort of stipulation that says that they have to run within trainers that can be commercially bought. Yeah. And an individual made this world record. I can't remember. It was a female, but I can't remember who it was. And they said there was an issue of whether her trainers were specifically designed for her or could be commercially available.
Yeah.
And ultimately, she was enhancing herself by giving herself the best running trainer she could,
which
is fine. But then there was that extra stipulation, and was that illegal enhancing?
It's madness.
Because ultimately, you go back and go, okay, well, they don't just look at the individual and honing that individual. They look at if the sport has equipment
every
around
part of
it.
Them,
looking at the fencing jacket or the mask or the sword, and we obviously have certain requirements regarding how bent your sword can be, and we have requirements and tests on the pressure of the button to go in the end of the foil at Epe and things like this, and you will have all these extra enhancements.
For those not familiar with fencing, a foil and an Epe are types of swords?
Types of swords, and Sabre's the other one,
Lindsay does a bit of fencing, you may have realised.
But I think it leads on to something that's quite common in cycling, is that, I think it was like 1950-something, Eddie Merckx did the world hour record. So he got in a velodrome
on the bike,
went for an hour and set an amazing record. And then for years, the UCI, who's the world governing body of cycling, said if you're going to attempt this record, you have to do it on a bike that is similar, basically.
Yeah.
So then it didn't get broken for ages, and then finally they kind of relented and said, they had a separate record whereby you could do it on any bike you wanted. So with aerodynamic. More aerodynamic position and helmet and skin suit and whatever else, and so in that way it was kind of differentiating between sort of the average human at the time that Eddie Merckx set the record and
the prototypes
enhanced human effort, I guess.
Yeah, because I was just going to mention this because this happens a lot in motorsport as well. So I follow motorbikes, and there are essentially different divisions. Yeah. Like you have MotoGP, which is the prototype. The bikes can cost millions of pounds each. Then you have something like World Superbikes, where part of the rule is that it has to be a commercially available bike. Mm. That is, you're allowed to do certain things to it, but essentially it's something that anyone can go out and buy. And so there are differences. Mm. So in the same with the sport, but then I suppose we have to ask the question, well, why are we bothering with all this competition? What's the point? Are we just trying to say, what's the best any old Joe can go out and do in an average pair of running trainers? Or are we saying, well, what is the best humanity can achieve with all the technology and all the...
I think it's what humanity can achieve. I think it's that we've a lot of society have this thing of what is the best we can achieve. And ultimately, these world records are constantly broken. But that's not because the runners back in 60s and 70s were not as good as the runners they were now. If they'd had the technology, whether it's running trainers or nutrition or whatever it is, could they have achieved what they've achieved now? Potentially.
Yeah.
But it's this idea that ultimately the human race isn't becoming, I inverted commas, better. It's all the around and the enhancements around it that's making those individuals better.
I suppose there's when it comes to like the world's strongest man.
Yeah.
A lot of people talk about that. Oh, we don't really care about whether they're on drugs because we want to see Eddie Hall pull deadlift 500 kilograms. Like that is an amazing feat, and probably would have had no chance of doing it had he not been on up to his eyeballs on juice. But I think, which probably sounds ridiculous for me to accuse him of that, but actually, a lot of strongmen and professional strongmen will admit they're on it because there's actually. It's such an intense form of competition that actually it's almost impossible to keep up if you're not on them.
But what's wrong with that is interesting because it's almost separate to the Olympics. It's not.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's partly because I think.
Because of
that. Well.
It's a different type of training, I guess.
They're drug tested,
yeah.
But they're informed of what the tests are. So I'd say they could stop taking a certain drug 8 days before the test and then they'll be out of the system. Or maybe the test. There's a question about quality and quantity of tests.
Yeah, I think.
I think it depends on the different sports. So you brought in World's Strongest Man, where ultimately you're competing in the sense that you are competing against each other, but you're competing to lift the heaviest weight. And a bit like in athletics, yes, you are like the 100 meters. You're competing against others, but ultimately you're competing against that time.
Yeah.
But then looking at other sports, so football, you're competing against the other team, but then what's the greater goal? Or fencing. In the fencing Olympic final, you have two individuals that fence each other. But then what's the other achievement that gets out of it? There's no time. There's a set amount of hits you have to get. But what's that other achievement? And I think
it's
that in some of those sports, ultimately, as long as you're better than your opponent, then that's all you need to be. Whilst I think in other sports like World's Strongest Man or throwing or certain types of athletics, you're not just competing against others, you're competing against that time or that weight or that distance that is what can the human body achieve.
Mm. But I think what annoys me, going back to this Caster Semenya thing, is that I feel like the IAAF, sort of the International Olympics sort of governing body.
International Athletics? International Association of Athletic Federations, isn't that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like the IAAF is kind of acting like a gatekeeper for humanity and what we mean by humanity. And it's saying, this is what we mean by the perfect thing that a human athlete can achieve. And now what they've decided is, now we've decided, this is what we mean by male, and this is what we mean by female. And there are suggestions that, like, Caster Semenya should maybe compete in, like, our own category.
Yeah.
Like, which is then saying, well, either you join the Paralympics, in which case you're saying, okay, no, you're not, you are actually disabled by this condition that you've got.
They refer to it as... differences of sexual development.
Yeah, but as I said to you before, Josh, I mean, even within the sort of male and female categories, you're going to have people with different levels of whatever hormones are in their system. It's just that just comes of being different people.
Yeah, I think it
just seems like we've drawn this arbitrary line that says, no, stop, we're not going to allow development to go any further.
Yeah. I think it's the same with any category. So obviously you have age categories with certain things. So they have these rules in gymnastics where, you know, the minimum age of individuals, because gymnastics is classed as a very young sport, and they said, well, they had to put an arbitrary line. It's going back to my research and looking at competence of individuals.
Mm.
You know, I know you look at the competency, but you put an arbitrary age line of 16 or 18 or whatever when you become an adult. And I think this idea with Caster Semenya is looking at testosterone levels, because how do you define a woman compared to a man? Then you might look at Josh and go, okay, you can tell he's a man. but how would you define that?
Mm.
And they did start to define it regarding testosterone levels, but then you could easily have men who would have a lot less testosterone
and
levels.
And this is exactly what I said.
And fall into similar categories that Caster Semenya may do, but she is classed as a woman. And this is this issue that there is an arbitrary line, but how do they define it? And they've had massive issues, and this is what was in this book that I read, that these were the problems that they had back in the day, where they didn't have medical technology in order to be able to measure these levels of various hormones and other requirements that they have. And that's the issue. And going back to this argument that, yes, that there will ultimately have to be arbitrary lines and everything, but it's how we make those arbitrary lines, and do we have more than one category? And if so, what are those categories?
The thing with the Caster Semenya situation as well is it's only really a problem because she's winning. If she wasn't winning races by over 4 seconds, and she looked the way she does, and she's just competing with all the other women, then I don't think there'd be a problem at all.
Well, that's what's so strange about it, isn't it? Is that in a competition where you're looking for the best, someone has come out and has been
the best,
there's ever been, and then it's too good.
Yeah, so it's like, let's just cancel all Usain Bolt's records because he's a little bit too tall. Let's just say, okay, height's stopping at 6 foot now for runners. That's going to be our arbitrary definition. Yeah. And okay, for weights in certain categories, we could say, okay, no, anyone heavier or anyone lighter than this, no, too much of an advantage.
Well, they said with Michael Phelps, and
his
feet and his hand span and his arm length and his height and things like that. And then, I'm only small and stuff. I mean, I wouldn't be a great 100 meter runner, I don't think. But yeah, exactly. And this goes back to this idea that we're all different, and this going back to this enhancement that ultimately enhancing me to make me taller will only meet, you know, for me to be the same height as other individuals. But then enhancing them to make them taller, what's that make that difference? And then putting this level of, what level of this enhancement can we do? Could you let me enhance myself to make me taller, but then would you stop me from enhancing myself to be taller than that? You know, and things like that.
So my background is, some of my research is in sci-fi, and I'm quite interested in these sort of visions of the future, getting like sort of Blade Runner and these sort of cyberpunk type movies where basically anyone goes out and can do whatever they like to their bodies. Do you think this is a direction we might find ourselves in as a human race, where we actually start to celebrate difference and technologies come such that we can, like, you want to go out, you want to be 6 foot tall, take this, go to this machine,
that hits it, Josh,
and like next time we see you, you'll be 6 foot tall?
I think it goes down to regulation, and I think as Josh and I sit here as lawyers, we go, or I certainly go, well, you've got this issue with medical advancement and regulation, and which comes first? It's normally medical advancement, and then the regulation follows. And I think you will always have that issue with what is the regulation behind it. I couldn't just take you off the street like and make you a Frankenstein and remove parts to insert other parts to make.
But
you,
I mean,
a,
if I've got
human,
my own competence, and if the technology exists. I mean, I'm just wondering.
Still, consent is not the only thing that you can rely on.
Why should the state be regulating what we do to our bodies? That's my controversial question for the podcast that I'm going to throw out there.
I suppose that just comes down to the question about the safety of libertarianism, doesn't it? We regulate alcohol production and sale and drugs and stuff. But I mean,
well, we try to, or we don't regulate, and that's still a problem.
Well, yeah. But
you've got lots of issues. So, for example, if you say that, you know, we can enhance ourselves with however we want, we've obviously got issues regarding sport and things like that. And if you don't even consider that, then you've got issues with you. Yes, you said, okay, well, if I have capacity or competency, then I can consent to anything. Well, technically, you can't.
Yeah.
And also, who can perform those procedures? So, obviously, if I said to Josh now, right, I'm gonna remove that kidney of yours, I mean, he could then take me to court. But then if you turn around to a medical professional, as in a surgeon who is a transplant surgeon, and say, remove my kidney, then they wouldn't be prosecuted the same way that I would have been, because they've got this exception for medical professionals. So who would perform these enhancements if there was such thing as like medical surgery? And ultimately, you've got issues with competency and consent. So, you know, is that individual really consenting to it, and you'll have issues of duress and coercion and other problems that just stem from it and things like that. And ultimately, you have to have some form of legal regulation, because a lot of these procedures would be classed as, you know, a sort of occasional actual bodily harm or grievous bodily harm, etc. And we obviously have laws regarding those.
Yeah, I mean, the other day I was watching the Scarlett Johansson version of The Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
And despite some of its problems
about... recently, yeah.
Yeah, despite some of its problems about whitewashing, there's a character in there who, because it's quite a lot of it's about human enhancement, there's a character in the film who, she's like, oh yeah, I got this in the, another enhancement. And it's like, he sort of went to, what, I think it looked like a tattoo shop.
Mm.
So, I mean, on one level you could think, well, maybe these enhancements could have in the future, maybe it will just be like a back street.
Well, there was a tattooist
a
that recently went
yeah,
to...
Yeah, with the ears cutting off ears, wasn't it?
Was yeah, that? And splitting tongues yeah. and things like this. I mean, obviously we have a number of exceptions regarding consent. So you have your medical professionals, you have your tattoo and an ear piercing, like I have my ears pierced. Mm. And then you also have certain sports, so boxing and things like that, which... But still consent, you know, I can't turn around to you, Mike, and say, right, I consent for you to chop my foot off. It's not legal. It's not allowed. Consent is not the only requirement mm. in order for something like that to be to
well,
be legal.
Would that be also be context as well? Because say someone had just sort of shot your foot off.
Well, yeah.
And you're saying, can you chop the rest of my foot? I'm just asking because
only in
you
a
guys,
medical emergency.
Right, yeah, because I'm just wondering, because you guys are coming from a legal perspective. I'm coming from a sort of philosophical, mm. I'm interested
so
in where humanity's going perspective.
So, for example, if, I hope not, this building started to burn down
yeah.
and I was stuck and my arm was stuck
yeah.
And I said, Mike, right, chop my arm off and then we can get out of this building, otherwise
yeah.
we will die from the burning fire, then that would be legally permissible
yeah.
to some extent, as long as the facts match. But if I just turn around now and said, why don't we make this podcast more exciting, chop my arm off, Mike,
yeah,
not quite the same.
Okay, no, I didn't, I mean, because I think to an average person, I don't think they would necessarily realise that that's how the law works
yeah.
as it is,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is quite interesting, I think. But I mean, just to go back to like, the general human enhancement, I do wonder if maybe the technology, because technology is so widely available now,
mm-hmm.
3D printing as well, for example,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's going to get to a stage where you don't need a medical professional to do certain procedures. I mean, an obvious one that I was thinking about actually is tattoos. I'm thinking, well, a computer tattoo would be safer, more effective. Like, do you know what I mean? It'll be
a robot tattooist.
Robot tattooist, mm. And then it's not too many more steps to get to sort of
robot
other enhancements. Yeah,
yeah. I suppose you can see unregulated minor surgeries in kind of people who call themselves biohackers.
Yeah, and this is what I was
thinking
about. Yeah.
So I mean, you see some people who've got they've inserted magnets into their fingertips
mm.
so that they can sense.
Or, yeah, they put...
Since the electromagnetic fields and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah, because we were at that workshop, weren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or people who've kind of put like RFID chips under their skin so that they can clock into contactless... you know, if you've got like a contactless key for their flat or something or their house.
Use the hand.
Use the hand. Which, I mean, it's Lindsay's looking quite pretty revolted and think... Yeah, it's for some people it's a very grim idea.
Mm.
But for obviously for these people, it's great. They think it's fantastic.
Yeah,
but I suppose it exposes that there's at least there's an appetite amongst the public on some level for people to do this type of thing.
Mm.
Whether it becomes more prevalent or it sort of stays as a very small scale thing on the fringe of society is I don't know.
I think what it exposes as well for me as a philosopher is that we've got this notion of what we define society. I know we don't wake up with this in our head every day, but we have this concept of what it is to be human
yeah.
and what humanity is. Mm. We know in our heads what we see as being an average male, an average female are
yeah.
From any sort of given nation, any sort of background. And what happens is the IAAF would have cast us from anything. They're sort of trying to act as gatekeepers for their version of what their competition is. But more generally, there's a concept where these biohackers are sort of subverting the concept of the human. And I think, I wonder if over time, as the technology becomes more ubiquitous, we as a society might be more open to things like that. I mean, it might very well be the case that we all get sort of ID chips under our skin, for example. I mean, I can't necessarily see that really as being too far off.
But then I think you're going back to that case of that tattooist that has just been jailed or that case and I think that some procedures such as like the splitting of the tongue or enhancements regarding tattoos and piercings, people would think is standard, and you will meet some individuals that have stretched earlobes and individuals that put horns in and things like this and you might think, okay, that's might not be something that I want to do, but that's something that individuals do. And I think that really brings home this idea that you can't really enhance your body regarding those aesthetic sort of things that much, compared to what some individuals might want to do or might allow to do. I mean, you could say, okay, Joshy, if you want to consent to have your ear chopped off, then what's the problem? But then I think there are lots of issues, and also you always have public policy issues. And I think that certainly I always go back to looking at, as a lawyer, going back to seeing what the law is like and what that says. And I'm not saying it's right, wrong or indifferent, but I think that's the issue. And I think it's the wider issues that we worry about.
Yeah, I suppose it's just the fact that we don't live in this libertarian dream society, isn't it?
And to an extent, the law reflects society, yeah, to an extent as well. And if society changed such that it became more acceptable, and also obviously we say you can't chop your ear off because we've got no technology to, I mean, you can regrow an ear in sort of 5 seconds. Whereas I'm thinking like 100 years down the line, like you've lost an ear,
stick a new one back on.
So therefore, 3D suddenly,
stick a new one with bat level echolocation on.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I'm just sort of, because we don't know where technology is going to take us. And really, when we talk about enhancement, I mean, it's such a broad concept, really.
I think,
it's
looking at enhancement for the good and enhancement for the evil and enhancement for other purposes. So I think that it's going back to that point where you have had enhancements within medical technology. Mm. So, for example, just looking at enhancements in what I look at regarding tissue donation and transplantation, ultimately it's an enhancement. But for the good, and without that medical technology, we might not be able to develop other things. And obviously regulation has followed that. But then I think some of these what were originally great ideas, which is what you were saying before, have been turned on the head by certain individuals or certain types of society, but not necessarily good. And I think that's where the issues arise, and how we make that distinction, or whether we make that distinction, is another day's topic. But... I think that's the issue, that if we were in a society where nothing was evil and everything was done for good and nothing was a means to an end, etc., then it would be great. But unfortunately, we don't live in that dream society.
But then there would be no good and no evil, because we wouldn't have a relative concept in which to...
Well, yeah, but I suppose there's... I think both Mike and I might have read a paper about military enhancement for military personnel.
Yeah.
But what happens when they leave? You know, should those enhancements be pulled out? Should they be allowed back in society with, I don't know, stronger, greater bone density, greater strength? You know, are they if they happen to get in a fight or something, are they a threat to non-enhanced individuals and stuff like that? I think that's another issue.
That's a whole minefield of
issues. I never thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose it's in terms of. Going back into being made better than everybody else, I think it links back to kind of the Paralympics as well. Like, you know, kind of the Paralympians who run on blades. Mm. What if the blade is better than a human leg?
And you can't buy them in the shop; they're custom made. So to go back to the trainer example, like actually, there's a bit of a crossover there, isn't there? Between, well, they are custom made and they can almost run faster than.
Well, yeah. So I mean, if you're running on blades, and then. I suppose then it poses the question of whether you are actually disabled.
What do we mean? In a sense of running, basically.
But going back to that, because that's really interesting. Never thought about that. What you said about the army, that you know, if you enhance them and then put them back into normal society, that would we have a world where we were enhancing individuals to fit their job? So would you enhance a surgeon that has to do very intricate procedures to have the particular fingers or hands or dexterity, or would you enhance a firefighter to make them stronger or
more resistant
or
to heat?
Exactly, more resistance to heat. Or would you enhance another individual to be better at their job, to make the world a better place? And that's interesting to think about. So would you say, okay, when you hit 18, some people have some idea of what their future's going to be, would they enhance that individual to make them better at that
job? Or do we scan them at birth and then decide what their job's going to be? I think that's quite a good place to end
taking the Soviet approach.
Let's leave it with some Aldous Huxley there for everyone. A bit of Brave New World to end on. But that was really interesting, I thought.
Fascinating stuff.
Thank you, Lindsay.
No problem.
Cheers. Thank you for listening to the In The Zone podcast with Mike Ryder and Josh Hughes.
For more podcasts and interesting chat, visit inthezonepodcast.com.